Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the...
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. This is Keith Haley, your host for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. Tonight's going to be an encore broadcast, and we're doing it sort of in honor of the big game, at least in this part of the country, when Ohio State University plays the University of Michigan in Columbus this coming Saturday. So we thought it would be appropriate to have an encore broadcast featuring Chief Paul Denton, Chief of Police of the Ohio State University Police Department, the largest campus police department in the United States. Many, many responsibilities beyond simply public safety. In an environment like that, Ohio State has 53,000 students, the largest on one campus in the United States. So enjoy the show. We won't have any call-ins tonight, and we hope you like what you hear, because I know Chief Denton is a remarkable professional in this field.
Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road. Along came a semi with a high and a covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this dear land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Cross the desert, fair man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Madawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocantula, Vancouver, Amsterdam, I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, fair man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel out ahead, my share, man. I've been everywhere.
It's time for the next edition of the Riverfine Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. Welcome again to another edition of Jumble Justice Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Keith Haley. We want to thank Johnny Cash again for getting through that song one more time. You don't get to hear the whole number, but if you did, he memorizes and sings the names of 90 different cities and states. I just wonder if he does that without a script. It's incredible anyway. Emily, I want to thank you for joining us again tonight on the show. Audrey and Emily are the technical and research advisors for the show, and they prepare a lot of good things for us throughout the weeks in the past and in the weeks to come. Special opening comments tonight. We really don't have any, but I want to talk to you a little bit about the purpose of this show if you haven't heard it before. Our purpose is to discuss the news and the issues and the events and developments and the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And our show is dedicated to the tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. The magic of Blog Talk Radio is something to comment on in case you want to get your own show. I'm fond of saying that. Blog Talk Radio is a leading-edge technology that uses telecommunications technology to get the job done. Alan Levy is the CEO of Blog Talk Radio. As a matter of fact, I should mention that, you'll probably switch to his show. His show goes right up against ours at 9 o'clock on Thursday evenings. But anyway, this has gone in a matter of 3 months to probably 3,500 or even 4,000 different shows. I haven't checked recently on the website, but it's just incredible. What is possible that any person, any interest group, it can be from cigars to astronomy, any organization can have their own show broadcasting live and streaming audio over the internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. Just think about the potential of that, and it's all absolutely free. And as you run down that list of genre of shows, you'll see they're in entertainment, they're radio, they're politics, they're sports, they're comedy, they're all sorts of things, and there's some very talented people on there. Of course, I've not had time to listen to anything near all of them, but I've plugged into some of the shows, and they're actually very good. And some of the celebrities you would recognize who have their own show. So these shows are immediately archived, and you can go on the internet or the Blog Talk Radio site at blogtalkradio.com, and you can see the last five shows are archived, and that's done about 5 minutes after the show. So when we finish tonight with our featured guest, who I'll get to in just a moment, you'll see that that show will be archived, and you can listen to it or download it to a computer or some other type of memory device. So I'm fond of saying, like the motto in the Cheez-Its box, you can get your own show if you don't like this one. Let me comment here a moment on some things coming up I've already said, but in the meantime, I've talked to some folks about booking show topics and guests here in the future. We want to do something, of course, we're going to try to get three or four state Minutemen directors on, and I understand that those folks are willing to do that. We want to do something on faith-based treatment in prisons and other kinds of correctional facilities. We want to get two or three really hot big city and county sheriff's department patrol officers on and have a whole night about police patrol, what some would say is the last great exciting job in police work. Jerome Skolnick years ago called them asphalt cowboys, and that was a compliment. He wasn't being negative about it. He's saying it's one of the last real adventurous jobs in the world. So it'd be interesting to hear what modern-day police patrol officers confront during their tour of duty. We're going to do something on surveillance in society, of course, one of my favorite subjects. We're going to change the time and do a show perhaps in March. I hope we can arrange it by then on the Romanian justice system. I'd like to do something on airport policing. I've already got some context about that I'd like to do something about. Then we'd like to do something on capital punishment, and then last week I mentioned something on child investigation. So we sort of gauge the show along with sort of what's going on in current events often, or as guests come along that are available, we make good use of them. Let me mention tonight's show is broken down into the usual segments. I do a little commentary on the news, and what I think I'm going to do tonight, since I know our guest is able to comment on just about anything in police work or criminal justice you want to talk about, I'll probably bring him in pretty early on that. But our topic tonight is campus policing. Yes, college and university policing, a side of policing that sometimes folks don't think a lot about. And our featured guest tonight is Paul Depp, who's chief of police of Ohio State University. Just think of that, the incredible job. I just looked through a roster of colleges in America, and Ohio State University is second in student numbers, I think, if the date is current, to only the University of Texas. They list Miami-Dade Community College as the largest college in America on one campus, but I don't think if you've been there and you've sort of seen it, I don't think it's really sort of one campus. So, but Ohio State is the largest on one campus. Well, here's what you do as a caller or a listener. You can listen on your computer with Windows Media Player, and you do that off of the host site, of course, or you can call in by phone to the show. That's either by cell phone, by landline. You could use the ever-present Skype service if you want to do that. And you can hear the whole show on the phone. So actually, if you were some other place and for some reason you had absolutely nothing else to do, you could listen to the show simply on your cell phone. And the call-in number is 347-996-5983. And what I'm able to do, I'm able to hold five calls at a time on the switchboard. And when I activate the microphone for each of those callers, all five can both hear the show and we can all talk to each other. So that's a very nice feature. I don't know if any of you ever had any experience with attempting to do internet broadcasting years ago. Perhaps in the 1990s, there were a couple of sites that let you do that, some for a fee, and you could broadcast to about 45 or 50 people, and that was it. On Blog Talk Radio, you can broadcast worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. Anyway, that'll be interesting for you to do. Tonight there's always something going on, and I know Chief Denton will probably have something to say about this, but I think we got past the Ohio State football game, and I'm very sorry that Ohio State did not win the national championship, and there's certainly a lot of sad fans in the state of Ohio and the Midwest because of that, but there's another issue down there in Franklin County that's pending. Potential disorder and disaster. The Franklin County Jail, are you ready for this, is cutting out the donuts for inmates. Inmates of the Franklin County Jail in the Columbus area are losing their donut privileges, and donuts are indeed a privilege. The sweets are being dropped as officials become more health conscious. County Commissioner Mary Jo Kilroy put a $55,000 annual contract for donuts on hold last month over questions about their nutritional value and their trans fat content. $55,000 for donuts, they don't get them often, says the inmates at the county's two correctional centers were served donuts every few weeks under a menu developed by a dietitian under contract with the county. So the county's decision to eliminate the donuts from inmates' diets comes as artery clogging trans fats are being removed from various types of foods. Now, I don't know, but I think this is something that's almost worth declaring war over in an institution to deprive someone of a donut. But anyway, that's going on. In the crazy world of criminal justice, the kind of people you have to meet, how would you like to meet a couple of Florida school teachers? One in particular, they've been put on probation. One's been convicted of six different felonies. And what Tamara Tootle did, she charged students $1 a day in order to allow them to miss physical education classes. This is reported in the Pensacola News Journal. Can you believe that? She was sentenced to 3 years probation, ordered to perform 300 hours of community service, and banned from teaching for 3 years. Why not life? Tootle, a phys ed teacher at Ernest Ward Middle School, admitted six felony counts of third-degree bribery. She told students that they could skip PE classes but still receive a grade of 100% if they paid her $1 a day. Tootle was arrested in April after another Ernest Ward PE teacher arrested for bribery told officials she had also been charging students bribes. Absolutely incredible. And you wonder why Johnny can't read? Boy, do we need to do something about the kind of folks that are there are many fine ones, I know, and some are my friends, but there's a portion that are coming in the door that should not be in that business at all. Here's a story, to use the vernacular, a very sweet story, actually, of something that went on about the burglar who returned the urn that contained the ashes of a four-year-old boy of a family that had died of cancer. And it says, even Stephen Green made a simple plea to a burglar who broke into their house. The burglar stole about $10,000 worth of valuables, but he also took an urn off of the mantel that contained the ashes of their cremated four-year-old son who had died of cancer. And they made a public plea, and somewhere in the middle of the night, the burglar or somebody drove up and left the urn and the ashes untouched at the end of their driveway. And they were able to recover those. So I suppose even a good burglar has moments where they are, you know, they have a conscience. So that's good. I'm going to go ahead and click on here and get a comment here, I think, from the chief. I believe he's on right now. Let's see if I can get him clicked on. Paul, is that you?
Hi, Keith. How are you this evening?
Just fine. How are you doing?
Great, great. On behalf of the men and women of the Ohio State University Police Department, I want to thank you for inviting me to be your guest this evening.
Great. Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to have you on. And I guess the first thing I could kind of ask you, how are things going after the loss?
After the loss, things are pretty somber on campus, to be honest with you. We were hoping for a big win, and it didn't happen. So things are, right now, it's a little down.
It just goes to show you that the absolute best can sometimes have a down day, can't they?
Exactly. And myself included, I probably should admit to this, but I had a little side wager going on with Chief Stump of University of Florida. And apparently I lost, and the consequence is that I will now be required to wear the University of Florida Police Department's hat for a day while at work and document that with a photo to Chief Stump. So.
Those are great traditions to follow, and I can recall when I had never gotten to ever see them play, but my grandson goes to the University of Texas, and I think what they do down there, if they ever lose their opening game, everybody comes to school dressed in black, I'm told. So it's kind of like attending a funeral.
That's what it sounds like.
It's really something. I had some surveillance camera news here tonight to comment on about some of this more sophisticated type of surveillance business, but I thought if it's okay with you to make the best use of our time and allow our guests to hear from you, could we just kind of start talking about campus policing?
Let's do, please.
And, my original interest in this, of course, has always been at the University of Cincinnati, we were always able to, once or twice a year, just take an undergrad course and teach a seminar on whatever we wanted. We had to plan the content out, of course. And one year I did one on campus policing, and I got so fascinated with it and discovered how much culture there was and the special responsibilities that campus police units had, particularly in the large universities. So we went together with the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators, our Criminal Justice Department did, and we hosted a national conference in 1982 called Critical Issues in Campus Policing. And one of our really superb graduate students, Daphne Mecklem, she teamed up with James Vondrell at the University of Cincinnati, Dr. Vondrell, and myself. And what we eventually did is we took all of the papers from that conference. It was a three-day conference. And put it together in a book called Critical Issues in Campus Policing. And some of your Ohio State folks, still Ohio State folks were there. Mm-hmm. John made a couple presentations down there, one on rare book security and on some other panel topics. But I was just fascinated at the kind of things that campus police deal with that nobody thinks about. I mean, you not only have the entire student and staff population on any given day, but you've got cross-through traffic that's sometimes a pain, too, right?
Yeah, students, faculty, staff, all of our traditional stakeholders, but the visitors, alumni, anyone that comes on campus, we are responsible for. And to put your visitors in context, I am somewhat new to the business in my third month at The Ohio State University after having served almost 28 years with Columbus Division of Police. So I was familiar with Ohio State, the agency, and have formed very close relations while working for Columbus, and now I'm with the university and starting off almost on a new career.
So it sounds as if you've been doing a little bit of university policing over the years, whether you worked for Ohio State or not, right?
I think if you live or work in Columbus, Ohio State's part of your life or lifestyle in some form or another.
Well, what are the sort of the general responsibilities of a campus police department, the ones we probably have some sense for, but what are some of the other things that in sort of big areas of responsibility that you folks deal with?
Sure. We are a full-service police department, and that is probably common among large universities. We have certainly a large contingent that works patrol. We also have an investigative unit, K-9, a SRT, Special Response Team, or SWAT, depending on what the nomenclature is in an agency. We do all of those traditional police functions, but we also do such things as special event details, dignitary protection, or special visitor protection. So anything that happens on campus that are unique circumstances, and that could be protection of special collections. We have several museums, critical facilities of very hazardous materials, critical research. Everything is a city within a city.
Did you have some involvement in the internal discipline of the university too, where I know some of these chiefs and staff at our conference years ago were talking about the fact that sometimes some type of violation of a university regulation, the campus police are the ones that catch them doing it, but it's not taken to the public justice system. Sometimes it's not even a violation of law, but it's a violation of university regulations. And I suppose, like any category of police work, you see a lot of things, right?
Yes, sir. That's true. We do provide and refer cases to student judiciary affairs. That is student judicial affairs. That is the administrative body that hears violations of the student code of conduct. So, yes, we do, unlike a municipal police department or state or local police department, we can refer cases through an administrative process.
What would be something that would fall in that category, Chief?
It could be anything that is a crime, but also it could be other conduct, I suppose, relationship issues, even cheating, misconduct at an event. It's something that could be criminal, but you decide to refer it to the administrative process. It's anything that violates the student code of conduct.
And could we mention parking? That's an issue on the Ohio State campus, could it?
Transport, well, in our organization, and this may or may not be like others, there is a separate division.
Oh.
Separate agencies of transportation and parking that handles those kind of tasks, thankfully, because of parking and parking issues and traffic control and the more the routine elements of it are big responsibility. Those folks work closely with us, and we have a great relationship with the administrators and the officers that are assigned to that detail. But rather take a trained, sworn, commissioned police officer to traffic enforcement, the Ohio State structure, as others that are less than commissioned officers, but still expert or specialist in that area to handle those tasks. It seems to work well.
Oh, that's great. One of the people that was a contributor and a presenter at this conference we did way back in the 80s was Caleb Brunson. And he was in charge of special events parking at Ohio State University.
Well,
so what a story he had about the football and rock concerts and all sorts of things. You probably don't do those anymore, do you, or do you?
We do traffic details if it involves the arterial streets, the state highways, any the through streets on campus. Yes, we'd have officers assigned to those details. In terms of enforcing your parking stickers or your parking on the lots or selling tickets, so that's all handled by transportation and parking. Barricades, deciding which lots are open and which lots are closed, those are all administrative functions. It's handled by that other entity. But, again, if it's enforcement, if it's traffic direction control, we have officers in the street that do that and handle part of those responsibilities. It's a force multiplier. We combine each other and work well together.
What What type of liaison do you have with, like, local police departments in the area, the city police, I'm sure, and the sheriff's department? But what kind of things happen that cause you to have, you know, a special relationship, or what events would cause that?
Certainly major events, and that would include Ohio State football and basketball, sporting events. We work closely with Columbus Police, Franklin County Sheriff's, and the State Highway Patrol. And for football games, that is a multi-agency approach to that. We have other celebrations on campus that we might bring in other outside agencies to assist us. And frankly, we couldn't do it without their cooperation, collaboration. I call upon my peers frequently, my former coworkers, to assist. We work on tactical and operational plans for those events. We sit down and outline areas of responsibility. We have a combined incident command center. We'll have command officers that head the event and work out the tactical and operational responsibilities while the event is in progress. We're fortunate in Franklin County and Columbus in the area surrounding the Ohio State University. We have these great relationships with other agencies. And it's frankly part of the benefit of my transition from Columbus to the university is that I brought a lot of those relationships with me. Off-campus crime, certainly that, you know, criminals know no boundaries. They don't care about jurisdictional lines or demarcation on a map. Crime crosses all areas and all jurisdictions. So the sharing of information and liaison in that regard is very good. We are working on a joint police substation in the off-campus area. It will be occupied by both Columbus Police and University Police officers at part of the time. And that's a joint project that's funded and planned and being worked on by both the university and the city of Columbus. Sometimes we partner up officers from the university, work with Columbus officers and plainclothes and undercover assignments, and particularly during student breaks, to anti-burglary initiatives, and just a variety of investigation cases that bring us together.
Yeah, we have a situation where I work. We don't have a campus police department, of course, and we just started student monitors, but they're not around during breaks, and that is a time when things end up missing on campus. So I don't know how many projectors we've lost in classrooms, even when we lock them up. So kind of interesting. I was wondering, what's the headcount of your police department, and what are the different delineations of people? I mean, you have sworn officers, and what other types of support staff?
We, if you want to know our staffing levels, we have 40 officers, and then when you add the command and supervisory rank, we're at a staffing of about 50 members. We are supported by a variety of student support and non-sworn support. And we have student safety services. These are called on some campuses the student escort services that work with us, provide rides to other students and to staff and visitors from one point to the other at different times as a safety escort. We have a security and fire prevention division under the Department of Public Safety that has unarmed guards, guard details at the art museum, for example, at the library, and other high-risk facilities. They'll provide those kind of services. We have a campus a protection officer, again, non-sworn position that does such things as help motorists assist and help with lockouts and other kind of facility checks. The Ohio State University Medical Center has a separate security department as well. While they're not under the police or public safety department, they have a direct line of report to my boss, so the director of the hospital security and the director of public safety work together on a variety in the hospital venue is a whole another set of issues. So in addition to the sworn police functions that fall under me, there are other auxiliary support services that, that perform public safety functions on campus.
You know, another person that came and presented at this conference in Cincinnati years ago was the chief of your medical center.
Oh.
And it is interesting to hear them talk about mm-hmm. their concerns. You would think the hospital would run fairly smoothly, but a lot of things go on. After dark and late. And,
late. Yeah, a whole different set of rules and issues that they have to follow and standards that, that they follow in a medical center. Interestingly, on campus, they also have a prison ward. As I was getting a tour around my new jurisdiction, I was surprised to see prison guards and prisoners right there in the, on campus in the medical center.
Isn't that something?
It was a surprise to me. So, again, I think I call it a city within a city. We have a high school on campus, an accredited high school, and so we have high school students and,
oh my.
And prisons and power plants and everything you would expect in a city.
Yeah, boat docks. You don't have a lake, do you?
We do have a river that runs through campus, and they. It's not very big or deep, but it is a water, available for watercraft.
I was looking at some crime data, and of course, crime does occur on university campuses. But I think it's pretty easy to make the case. It's there aren't a whole lot of places that are more safe, are there?
I would hold that out, particularly if you're looking at the violent crime statistics. Probably our most common type of crime would be theft or property offenses. And things that, just as you described on your campus, Professor Haley, that the things that are easily targeted and have relatively high value.
Right, and you're loaded with high value items. That's for sure. I was wondering what makes a person want to be a campus police officer?
It's interesting you ask that, because today we are going through some interviews for vacancies, and that is one of the questions. You know, why do they seek out a position as a campus officer versus another jurisdiction? And it is the challenge of working in an educational environment, and people that usually appreciate learning, the diversity of the population, and diversity in terms of international cultures, levels of skill and academic interests, the diversity of people that you run into. That whole is a stimulating environment for, in terms of policing. I think policing, in my own opinion, is that police work is a calling that not everyone can do. And I would take it to the next level and say policing in a university setting is a special calling that not every police officer can do.
You've probably had some from other agencies that have tried to come on and right?
Yeah, one candidate thought that the university police were security guards, and certainly we set the record straight with that. That's a candidate, but it is a great place for someone to pursue a police career because of that. And the opportunities are endless. Because we don't have a necessary high volume of crime, what I find is that officers aggressively follow up on the crimes that they do get involved in reporting to them and investigating. So they'll take that little extra step to collect more evidence, to interview that extra witness, to set up a surveillance, all on their own initiative, and they have the time and the knowledge and skill to do that. Training opportunities, the ability to attend conferences, such as you described, to network with other campus law enforcement and other law enforcement professionals is there because of the nature of our business. You always have to stay at the top of your skill and knowledge in order to provide the service that we do.
What are some of the special issues and problems that arise in dealing with this group of people we call faculty? I mean, they're in and out of buildings all hours of the day and night, I'm sure. And I say this tongue-in-cheek, of course, but, you know, some are the most important people in the world, right?
Yes, sir. I believe that.
and probably don't like to be interfered with, you know, on a fairly regular basis. Is that especially difficult for campus police officers at times?
It can be, and I'll probably footnote this by saying it's not just faculty, but anyone in this open environment of education, of learning, may not understand policing and what policing and law enforcement is about. So part of that job, I believe, is educating them of why personal safety is important, for example, why securing your information and your research is important, because they are so focused on what they do, on the learning process, on the research process, that they're almost blinded to the realities of the outside world. I can say that people have been very open and receptive to that kind of message, at least in my time with the university, and in the officers. If it's explained to people in a respectful and in a clear manner, they usually grasp that. I attended one event. We had an emergency planning event that talked about the potential for avian flu that was just addressed to the faculty level, and faculty and staff, and they were very open to hearing that message of how to plan in terms of their academic departments in event of such a disaster. So there's more awareness, I guess, and I wouldn't stereotype any one group on campus as having a mindset or not.
Would you... Ohio State would be, what, just shy of 50,000 students, or is it over 50,000?
We are over 50,000, and in fact, this fall we were over 51,000, and at least at that time identified as the largest student population in the country. So we did reach number one in that regard. We also have branch campuses outside of Columbus. Wooster is our agriculture and technical college. We have farmlands up there. Marion, Ohio has a branch campus. There's even a lighthouse in an island in Lake Erie that has university property and responsibility for.
What has Homeland Security meant to your campus? Everybody else is dealing with that issue one way or the other. What's that mean that you could talk about for our guests?
And I've got to be careful in how I explain this, but there are places and facilities and research, for example, that are deemed critical in terms of homeland security on campus. And certainly when you have a large crowd, large sporting event, that presents a homeland security risk. So those kind of either circumstances or facilities or work sites do create special interest in terms of our approach to protecting them.
And I think one of the real attributes, positive attributes of American higher education is that, we still have foreign students are choosing here to come here and for graduate school. I would say we'll be in trouble when they don't want to come here anymore. And what would be your foreign student population there? Would you happen to know those numbers roughly?
I don't have those kind of numbers. There are quite a few foreign students that do attend Ohio State University, and they are well received.
Yep. And many of them would like to stay in the United States, and in fact do legally. But boy, it's incredible to try to keep track of everybody. Do you have to have an ID on campus if you work, faculty, staff? Student, everybody have to have an ID, a picture ID?
Yes, sir. We have a buck ID and a photo ID and a number. But that's integrated into the entire campus life. That's your credit card, so to speak. It allows you to get meal tickets or buy your tickets to events or get access to activities. So while it may sound ominous to civil libertarians, it is the all-purpose card, so to speak, that will give you access to the campus and the many services that are there.
What goes on that you could talk about surveillance technology-wise? Is that Ohio State, I'm sure, has had surveillance cameras since they were probably came into existence in one form or another, but is that a big part of your security provision there?
Yes, sir. Security cameras are used both in specific facilities and to monitor certain locations, but also in larger venues that take more of a broad view of campus and allows us to really multiply our force and the visibility of what we can see and get access and become aware of. So it is great technology. It's just an integrated part of our operation.
I was reading in all headline news here just this past week about some of the camera technology that's available at Johns Hopkins, and you in fact might have some of these things, but they have their systems, or at least some of their system is computer monitored as opposed to people monitored. Well, it's
mm-hmm.
sort of. But this system records information such as the following: how a person moves, whether the person is male or female, whether they're carrying anything or not, and whether what she or he is carrying appears to be heavy. That's interesting, isn't it?
It is. That is. That is something that certainly those kind of development projects and things that are actually online are very much interest, and I think it depends the future of camera security technology.
Whether the person is moving faster or slower, that is typical, or faster or slower for a particular location, then it also alerts security to quickly gathering or dispersing crowds. Too fast or too slow cars, and then of course objects that are left unattended in odd places. So,
what a great resource! What a great resource that sounds like.
And Maryland has been on this too. One of the guys we had at the conference years ago was Al Thompson, and they were just starting to use security cameras and card access to all sorts of things. And he had described, I remember just reviewing his presentation in the book, Critical Issues in Campus Policing, he was talking about how many crimes they had solved with this card access system, like arson. They could put something within, 13 seconds of where this fire occurred, and then they could get a confession of them. And I guess at least in those days, people were kind of uninformed and stupid about how incriminating these things were. But they would use these cards. I wanted to ask you a little bit about dorm security. You hear so many things about what goes on or does not go on in university dorms, and Ohio State would have as many of those as any place in the world, I suppose.
Yes, sir.
Is that done with student monitors and resident hall advisors and things like that, essentially?
Yeah, that's the first line approach to student resident life. They have, certainly the resident advisors that are on the hallways, and then the building staff, and that's the first contact. But then our officers are work close liaison with those. There are assigned buildings that they go into. They talk to students. They walk through, and that's their area, part of their patrol beat, so to speak, that they're responsible for making contacts in those on a regular basis. And probably also one of the things that we get involved in terms of education and personal safety issues, because frankly, young people do not think about that and about taking accountability for personal safety. Oftentimes, it's the first time they've been away from home or in an area that's new to them. So, what we call piggybacking. Well, we have the good access system and good door controls and someone sitting at in the lobby. If the student that walks through the door doesn't stop the next person right behind him and says, wait a minute, you're not part of this dorm, you got to check in at the desk, well, then those piggyback situations just lead to crime opportunities. So dorm life, it's also been a positive because we use those networks of residential life, so to speak, to plan activities. Around the Ohio State-Michigan game, for example, there was a student affairs had a lottery where if the students checked back in three times during the evening into their dorm, they were eligible for a drawing for the bowl championship game. It included a trip and tickets and hotel and so forth. So it is a focus of campus life, and we use that in terms of education and crime control as well.
So that is interesting. You were mentioning also that the library is, being remodeled there or moved at Hyde University?
Yeah, the main library is being renovated, so they moved the collection to another facility on campus. They've closed off some of their collections. The rare book collection, so to speak, is now been taken out of circulation and just used restricted for research work and so forth. So that was a major project that'll be going on over the next several years.
Boy.
They also have special, you know, as you might expect, there's specialty libraries on campus, the law library, the geologic library and museum collection. So that's, and the various art collections. That's the other great thing about campus policing. You get all of that in one very closed area, all that exposure of collections and research work and things that really are priceless.
It's about 10 careers of experience in one career, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
People don't realize it. You know, when you and I were talking about coming on the show, I told you that they caught the guy up near Oberlin University where he had 1,100 index cards. I just looked at going the book about that. He had 5,000 index cards in boxes in the back of the station wagon, with the names of rare books and the exact location in libraries and primarily university libraries all over the United States.
And
he's out for an evening ride. He was traveling across the United States stealing books.
Stealing books.
Yeah.
We've had those. Sometimes they'll cut out the pictures, things that could be sold or fenced on the street. Before I came with the university, when I was still at the city, I did work with John Kleberg and Patrick Mond, two of who are now co-workers and associates in my campus life. But on this issue of art theft and protection of collectibles, we started looking at the many things that are just on public display at the university and at the time in city facilities. We said, you know, these things have more value in terms of dollars or estimated value than what a bank machine might have, for example, the cash in a bank machine. And these are just hanging there, so oftentimes unprotected, uninventoried, and often not even noticed until they're missing it for a long time. So we did a project on art theft and protection of special assets such as that.
You know, I've had occasion to speak to a couple of museum directors over the years, and the security of some of these items, I didn't realize that when these collections go across the United States, you know, they pass you in these 18-wheeler trucks, and some of these trucks actually have gun ports on the side of them, because the cargo they're carrying is virtually priceless. And they try to be as unobtrusive as possible, but I think since I've had that conversation with people occasionally, I've probably identified some of these trucks. I've seen them, you know, pass me on the freeway or something, and they're, you know, they look very special, and they have special, you know, shocks and security alarms and all kinds of things, so they must be incredibly stocked with technology that protects that cargo, and certainly I'm sure they have armed guards protecting them also, so it's an interesting business, isn't it?
It is, and we were talking about the qualities of policing and what kind of person would be attracted to policing in a campus environment. You know, that's another element of it. It's that curiosity, that the interest in things outside your normal scope of your life experience that can draw you to say, look what I can learn and see and experience on campus and while doing police work. It is really rewarding.
One of our adjuncts at Tiffin University is just now designing his doctoral dissertation, and he's interested in working, doing something on the police and the homeless, and of course that's a homeless, endless problem. And What's that like on the Ohio State University campus? I suppose you find a resident once in a while here and there, don't you?
There are disadvantaged people that come on campus, or at least on the campus, the street bordering campus. Oftentimes our students become victims of aggressive panhandling. When they think they're doing the social good, sometimes that they are not. And so, again, becomes an education process in our intervention with the students as victims, with our facility operators, our building managers, to explain to them how to secure some areas, and also working with the city of Columbus, because you have encampments that are in the vicinity of downtown. But you know, transient people, individuals that prey on others, are drawn to wherever students are in the large populations. That are, you know, they're walking around, they're out in the open, and sometimes that can be a problem.
Dallas police here in the next couple weeks, I'm kind of hooking him up with some folks down there. In fact, a former Dallas officer that took this on as a real burden in life, a real challenge, and he's worked with the homeless and been a number one national advocate, also, at least on the national scene. And they're going to try to do a census of all the homeless here in a couple weeks in Dallas. And I can remember, you know, running the Dallas Marathon. I always like to get there early and sort of watch the thing unfold. And you'd get down there at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and you know, if it happened to be cold that particular time, you step into one of these doorways or something, boy, you'd be walking into, you know, you've seen it a million times in Columbus as a police officer, but you sometimes walk right in on a family living right in the doorway. And when the marathon starts to get started and people start coming to work, they up and move out, and you know, they're sort of on their way. But it's an incredible problem, and I can't even imagine what Chief Bratton and the officers in Los Angeles are dealing with, because they've had that Supreme Court decision out there in the state that says you can't move them.
Oh, yeah.
And I heard an NPR show, National Public Radio show, that where they interviewed some of these officers, or a couple of these officers, and they all volunteer for that assignment. They don't want anybody to work in that assignment that doesn't, you know, carry a burden for that issue. And but you could be running a business, and apparently this goes several miles. You're talking about tens of thousands of people that live right on the sidewalk, and you can't move them. It's sad in one way, but certainly odd in another. In the
most communities, especially that I'm aware of in Columbus, there are resources, there are social networks that support those that are disadvantaged, and maybe those kind of referral processes, rather than, you know, the hard nose, let's move them out and arrest them and enforce it, but more the referral and putting them in connection with the social support groups is the approach. I don't know if that's what they're doing in L.A. or not.
I think nationwide that's probably the prevailing view. But some of these people that have owned businesses for years, you know, this network just keeps extending. So, you know, one week you'll have nobody living in front of your business, and then next week you have two or three people in tents or boxes or something like that. And it's very sad, and one of the things that always bothered me that, you know, you've got a lot of mentally ill people there. And, you know, a portion, what is it, 25-30% are veterans. I mean, they've actually served in the armed forces, and you know, they're out on the street. So that's a sad state of affairs. But then you've got that small portion that probably like it.
And then you take a police officer who's supposed to go out on a call and sort all that out at the spur of the moment and not make a mistake.
Well, you've probably heard me say it before, but in my limited writings and the things I always talk about police, I've never liked the long-term involvement of at least regular city police and large county police in problem solving. You sort of go out and fix it, and that's the best that you can do. And the idea that you're going to transform somebody's marriage that's been fighting and beating each other for 35 or 40 years is a little far-fetched, I think. But that's my own particular view about it. What happens in terms of careers there. Do most of your people come and stay and retire? I mean, is that a regular?
I'm finding that, yes, there are officers that have been there for long term, although there are some that have used this as a stepping stone to other agencies. But most of the officers that are there now have been there longer term. It is their career in university policing, and that's what they intend to stay, that they like it. They find the opportunities are as much at the university police department as anywhere else in policing. And they like that personal nature, the ability to do different things and see different things is what attracts and keeps them. Certainly the pay scale, benefits, working at a university, and, you know, not just educational, but others, is an advantage.
You know, I would think that somebody that, of course, it has its attraction and intrigue, but somebody that's a deputy sheriff in a rural county, that they get, three calls a week on the night shift, might better enjoy something like the Ohio State University of Police, I think, right?
And I would, what I would suggest, though, is that those that are looking to make that jump, come and look at it, experience some campus life. If you were going from rural policing to urban campus policing, it might be culture shock. But so you have to spend some time. You'd want to be familiar with what campus life is like before you made that career move. But I think once you find it, find out what it's like, it is very attractive.
I guess one of the shocks would be all these people
who are out and about and on all hours of the night. Young people don't have keep the same hours as those older folks.
What would be your daily population in February?
In February, on main campus, we probably have 50 to 75 people, 75,000 people if you count staff and the visitors and so forth at any one time, easily out and about. And it's interesting, when you talk about our population, it changes every 4 years. You've got a new group of people. So you build these relationships in terms of community or interest groups or leadership, and then 4 years later you're rebuilding that, and 4 years later you're rebuilding that. So that is a unique thing about campus policing, that sense of community is always changing and always fluid.
You don't have any private party celebrations when certain guys graduate, do you?
Maybe we should.
Yeah, I can recall that police worker. Somebody, it was a particular problem, moved, and everybody was glad. So. Or at least they moved to somebody else's beat, which was good. So, what do you think? Let's talk about you for just a moment here. And I know you've given up some of your valuable time tonight, but what's it meant for you here in the first 3 months? What's been the biggest surprise, and what are your reactions to your first 2 or 3 months there on the job?
At first, there are very few jobs that would have caused me to leave the secure and stable and environment that I had with Columbus. I had a great career at them of almost 28 years of service. And I've told others, I've said this many times, that there are very few jobs that would cause me to leave Columbus when I did. But the opportunity to be chief at the Ohio State University was one of those career moves that I just could not pass up. Policing is policing. I guess that's the thing that's not a surprise. The basis of police work and wherever you're at, there are some fundamental things that are very, very similar. You take calls for service, you help people, you see what needs done and you do it. The scope of the events, although I was familiar and I'd worked football games from an officer up to command level as on campus and around campus and done a graduation special duty detail, just that the large scope of the event and the detailed planning that goes into that throughout the university, transportation, parking, athletics, other groups that all come together just to make that event happen was somewhat surprising to me. And everybody pulls together and how professional and team-oriented they are. in getting that done was somewhat surprising. The other thing is that how skilled, I knew he had a good department. I wasn't coming to one that was fraught with problems and they were looking for a lot of change, but just the quality and skill of the people that I have working with me is just tremendous. And I guess that's not a surprise when you look at the foundation that was built by those that were there already and before me in leadership positions and doing things such as the conference you mentioned, Professor Haley, it really speaks to the quality of that agency, and it's an honor to be part of that environment and that group.
I was reading yesterday that 36 university campuses nationwide are accredited by CALEA. Is Iowa State one of those?
We are not accredited by CALEA or IACLEA, which is the Campus Law Enforcement Association. It's something that I've looked into and may pursue as in my tenure as chief.
Very time-consuming, and sometimes, you always ask the same question about accreditation and accrediting agencies, sort of like, who are these folks to tell us we're okay? I know that, I had a little bit of that with the State Law Enforcement Commission issues, California, for example, didn't want to do any accreditation. They said that their state post agency would do that. We'll take care of it. In fact, they did. And then accreditation started very slowly in policing, as you know.
Yes, it did. Yes, it
picked up, and now I think there are literally thousands of departments. But I was betting, if I were a betting person 25 years ago, I was thinking it wasn't going to make it. But I think it's fairly stable now, right?
It seems to be. It seems to be, at least in my experience.
Well, Paul, what would you like to conclude with? Anything that you'd like to mention about campus policing? Are you doing any recruiting? Do you need some officers?
We need officers. I'd encourage people to consider our department, to give us a look, and in terms of a career choice. People of all race, genders, creeds, nationalities, and orientation, we'd certainly welcome you to be a part of our team. Check our website when the application periods are open, and they're open sometimes very briefly, and the opportunities do exist. I want to thank you again for